At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And as always, thanks for dropping by and hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game of the Odyssey app and at 92.9thegame.com. And if you singularly search us and search us out over on Odyssey. For those not familiar, the SDHAM program is the morning show attached to the Soccer Down Here Network. And it is Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern Time for 2 hours and normally a lot longer, where we kind of go over the stories of the day, the stories that you missed, the stories that are proceeding from what happened in the overnight. And we have our lists of experts, pundits, and guests to carry you through. And we'll do deep dives even into conversations as we go forward when it comes to the topics of the day. This time around, it's a variety of topics. And one has to do with Major League Soccer as they proceed to the conference final round of everything. We catch up with our friend Nico Moreno from Sounder at Heart and Pulso Sports. Break down the weekend that was. We went from 8 down to 4. And now we're going to check out the weekend that will be as we find out after the weekend is up who will be participating in MLS Cup in 2025. Then we kind of take a tour of the NAIA and the college game because there are, in the footprint here of the SDH Network, we have three teams, the men's and the women's side at Life University, as well as the women's side at Truett McConnell and Truett McConnell College, that are currently in the rounds of 16 in their respective tournaments, heading to either Orange Beach or Pensacola. We catch up with all three head coaches, men's and women's side for Life University and the women's side at Truett McConnell. We find out what's going on. We talk about their seasons and find out what they've learned about themselves as they get ready for the Nationals week down in Florida, chasing after women's and men's titles in the NAIA. And then lastly, as a part of an ongoing series that we have at the SDH Network, we're touring each of the host cities that are attached to the World Cup coming up in 2026. And what we're efforting to do on an opportunity basis is catch up with each of the host cities and find out how things are proceeding as they're getting ready for the build and they're getting ready for the planet to show up and to be a part of their own presentations when it comes to the World Cup this summer. We catch up with Executive Director for Toronto and Toronto World Cup 2026, Sharon Bollenbach, and we find out what's going on with that market, where they are when it comes to getting built what they need to get built, where infrastructure is, concerns, and anything else going on to get us all acquainted with how Toronto plans on tackling the world when they come to Ontario province for World Cup in 2026. So first up, it is a tour of Major League Soccer as we get ready for conference finals, and it's a conversation where we catch up with our friend Nico Moreno from Pulso Sports and Sounder at Heart and find out what's going on as we are down to the Final Four in Major League Soccer in 2025. Let's take a peek at the playoffs and the weekend that was, and we'll get into the weekend that will be, and we'll start with the late game, the last one. And I know that we've been looking at San Diego. Like I said, when you came in, I went down the Milan Olasky rabbit hole again, and I was still trying to figure out how he escaped San Diego and ended up in Philly. And I know San Diego sat there and said, well, who's still playing? You know, who's playing now? San Diego, it took a little bit for them in the late game on Monday Night Football to get prepped and end up in the Western Conference Final, but it took this moment for it to happen. Courtesy of our friends at Jammin' 95.7 in San Diego FC. It's our friend Adrian Garcia Marquez with the call. And, of course, he lit it up.
El Capitan, scanning for openings, leaves it for Christopher McVay. Back to Yepet. Yepet lifts it, trying to get it into the area for Corey Baird, who heels it back on there. Dreyer! Goal! El Paletero delivering again. Paletero reign in San Diego. He cracked it. G-O-L-A-Z-O. Goal. Golazo. Anders Dreyer. Always on fire. Qué clase de paletero. Qué clase de jugador Darren Smith. When you need your MVP, your MVP paletero shows up when you need him most.
Oh, AGM. He is absolute class.
I have never heard his call, but I really have never heard his call, but that is some quality. Love that.
Man, you've never heard Adrian Garcia Marquez before?
I have not heard him on the call of the San Diego FC.
Wow, because he's a SoCal kid, and he also calls the Chargers games in Spanish, in addition to the stuff that he does with Big FOX, calling Liga MX and other the competitions like that. No, we are worshipers at the altar of the great AGM. There's a reason that we call the stadium the Murph Dragon. Down in San Diego, that is straight from his glossary, because it used to be Jack Murphy Stadium, and it's Snapdragon now, and so he merged the two together, the old and the new. It's the Murph. I wanted to try to do something before you took a sip, because I didn't want you to spit take the day before Thanksgiving all over your equipment. But yeah, AGM is class, and he comes up with stuff. Yeah, he did the Prince yell that you heard there. That was him doing Prince. And it is a great blending of jazz and the Hispanic calls and English language. And it just all comes together in this fantastic sauce. We believe in the church of Adrian Garcia Marquez. He is a stud, as the kids say.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. I mean, you know, it definitely felt like a bit of a gumbo of that call, because you know, he's bringing a little bit of that Spanglish component. El paletero is crazy, by the way. Paletero, because of the dryer, it's actually quite clever. That is awesome. I absolutely love it.
All right, so I was trying to find the translation because I couldn't find the spelling. When he called them el paletero, what was that?
Is the ice cream man, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm guessing because his last name's Dreyer, like the ice cream, right? That's the guess. I mean, as far as I could tell, that's where my mind went. So it's phenomenal, and that was a great goal, right? As ironic as that game was, to see San Diego, the team with usually All of the possession, all of the opportunities, all of the volume of play in this one. They had the possession, but they really had a hard time breaking down Minnesota like everyone else has all year long. But they take their one opportunity, their one shot, their one chance, and that little backheel from Barrett is phenomenal. And then Dreyer to put it away with very little angle, but he hits it with so much pace that there's just no way that St. Clair's getting to that ball, and he is clearly the best goalkeeper of the year. This is one of the best defenses. So the moment that you had, you put it away, and that's credit to San Diego and a team that, man, they show me that even when they're unable to get the chances that they want, they can put you away. And defensively, they were impressive. You got to give Minnesota also credit. I thought that they were the better team for the majority of this game. Because, you know, again, a lot of people have issues with playing against the run of play and, you know, their style. But they created the better chances. They really were on top of San Diego, but San Diego held on and they were able to take him out, man. And absolutely MVP. I mean, if we're in another era of MLS where there is no Lionel Messi, Dreyer is definitely a guy that should have or could have gotten that MVP vote. So credit to San Diego, and Pellegrino had a good game, and defensively this team is solid. It's going to be a good Western Conference final, although I feel like we already had the Western Conference final.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a good game.
So, and then Los Angeles, the LAFC Vancouver game, we talked about it a lot on Monday because to us, it's an instant classic. It is that game where you're staying up late because you wanted to watch it. And because of how just absolutely ridiculous it got, you stuck with it all the way through. And yeah, it was a late night, but nobody cared. I mean, Vancouver, they get that second yellow. They're down to 10. They're out of subs, players injured. They're down to 9. They are trying to figure out what they can stop the leaks in the dam with. It's like, okay, anybody got a spare finger? It's like Twister, Redfoot, right, and all this kind of stuff. And everything through the goal mouth. You had two posts and a crossbar in one sequence with Takaoka and Bouanga hitting it twice. It was crazy to me just how off the rails that game was. And Vancouver makes their way through, and Thomas Mueller, he's like, we're not done. And he has instantly assimilated himself into that Vancouver group thing. He's in a place where he can be a guy, not the guy, but a guy as part of a group. And I really dig that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know what? This game was a great representation of what each team has done all season. I have to give a lot of credit to Jasper Sorensen from the very beginning, from minute one, taking no chances. Even if you didn't know how ready he was going to be for this game, you start with him, Blackman as well, right? He's coming off an injury. You don't know, but you start him. Where he played Laborda at and how influential he was throughout the game. Everything about the way he put this team together and the red hot start should have been no surprise to anyone. What surprised me was LAFC's response to just getting hit twice in the face and being knocked down and getting back up. Look, that equalizer by Sun was as good as it gets. I mean, right moment, right time, difficult shot because of the distance that you're from the goal. In order to put that much pace and put it where he put it, oh man, I mean, it was a thing of beauty. I was watching it with my dad, and we kept replaying it over and over and over again because it was just such a difficult shot. Overtime was great. The contrast of different styles of plays, I mean, this was the Western Conference final. With all the respect to San Diego, of course, they've had a great season, but this had the stardom, this had the suspense, this had the emotion, the electricity, the venue. And look, we can sit here, and I really do think that it's just saltiness from Lloris to talk about the field and all of these things. I get it, but let's not take away from what it was, which was an instant classic, as you said, and that includes BC Place and the atmosphere that was there.
San Diego's a favorite right now in the juice box is at a plus 129. Vancouver is a plus 183. 90-minute draw is a plus 252 in the composite. What do you think?
Give me Vancouver, baby. Give me Vancouver. I had them as the champs from the very beginning of this playoffs. I've absolutely loved this team overall. And the reason why I picked them is because progressively, I felt like they could manage the start of this playoffs and then start to get guys back. And the fact that I said it last week, John, I told you this team is going to depend on how healthy they are. But at the same time, they already had this baseline where, look, we're going to be able to get places. And now that they get White back, eventually they'll get Gold back, Blackman's back. I mean, this team is going to be rolling in all cylinders by the time they play San Diego. And I do think that they're going to win it. They'll win it in 90. I'm almost sure going to win it in 90, and then they'll move on to the final, and we'll see what happens on the other side.
Okay, so then there is the other side. Messi and friends, a minus 200, taking on NYC, who's a plus 428. They didn't have Perea. They didn't have nothing. They didn't have their big guns, but you had Maxi Morales, and Maxi, who I think turned 704 the other day. I mean, he's still just comes in these big situations and he pops in and it's just like, all right, Maxi turns into Maxi. NYC got the goal that they needed and they got out of town. They put up with Philly and Philly doing Philly things, but they are a plus 428 going to the Erector Set to take on Messi and friends.
Yeah, that's a very reasonable line. I mean, to be quite frank, you got to give New York credit. I don't want to sit here and just say that Philly allowed this game to get out of hand, that they didn't put their goals away, that Baribo could have had this game finished early on, that Ilowski just didn't quite perform the way he had performed in the past, that Vasilev himself had a really bad game, I thought, compared to, you know, what you've seen out of him all season long. But I want to just stay with how this New York team played and the way that Jansen set this team up, because he realizes that he has lost his best player and he plays Nico Fernandez in this sort of like, I don't want to call it a false nine. I'm not really sure what to call it necessarily, but the way that he played with this team just worked. They were compact defensively. They give up some opportunities, but nothing that will, Matt Frisch couldn't handle. And then on the attack, they were able to put some pressure on this Philadelphia team. Nico has been outstanding. I mean, all season long. But I continue to say that what makes this team tick is the character, the discipline, the energy, the understanding of what everyone does on that field, and they took it to a team like Philadelphia that reigns in the same principles. That's what they do, right? And there were some red flags about Philadelphia going into this playoffs, regardless of them being the Shield winners and everything. It showed in this one. When it came down to the potatoes were boiling, it just felt like New York City just had been tested more and they've been able to get out of more situations than Philadelphia. And that's what gets them the goal. That's what gets them the ability to just hold on to that lead. And you just got to give credit to the well coaching there in New York City.
Couple of notes in the Eastern Conference before I let you loose for Thanksgiving. New York and DC United, Red Bulls. Red Bulls and DC United have come out with their roster decisions while we've been talking. And as of 4 minutes ago, DC United releases their notes. And they have declined Christian Benteke's option for 2026. Dr. Erica Tsogut, Managing Director of Soccer Operations, did say that they remain in discussions with his reps regarding a potential return in 2026. Also actively working to identify and recruit top-level talent, including DPs, as a part of our broader roster build moving forward. 16 players under contract, 6 options exercised, 5 declined, roster of 22. Current negotiations with Benteke and homegrown forward Christian Fletcher after declining their options in 25. Luis Barraza, who probably should have gotten hazard pay at times with that defense he had to have in front of him at DC. He needed a bonus, man. He was on loan, but he needed bonuses from DC United having to put up with that back line that he was behind. Barraza, Benteke, Lucas McNaughton eligible for free agency, which opens on the 10th. And once again, they mentioned that you got to be 24, have service. You can talk to folks at 1 o'clock. You can start pulling up to folks' front doors at 1 o'clock on the 10th. I could just see a bunch of GMs in their cars around the corner from homes at like 12:58. Is it 1 o'clock yet? You know, and at 1 o'clock, you're screaming, you hit the brakes in front of somebody's house. Under contract for DC, Avilas, Baji, Bartlett, Eno, Jordan Farr, Kim, Herrera, Karamoko, Jacob Morel, Joao Peglo, Peltola, Rolls, Schnegg, Brandon Cervania, Jared Stroud, Gavin Turner. Exercised options. Connor Antley, Caden Clark, Jackson Hopkins, Jose Kojima, Gabriel Pirani, Garrison Tubbs. There's some there. Options declined. Benteke, Dodson, Fletcher, Randall Leal, Rita Zuhir, and then free agents Barraza, Benteke, and McNaughton. So 22 for DC United. Red Bulls came out with their roster decisions literally just as I was making that sentence happen. So 28 players already under contract, one player out of contract, so they didn't really have a whole lot of decisions to make. Club declined the option on Kyle Duncan and Curtis Ofori, exercised the options on Peter Stroud and Sean Nealis, Tim Parker and AJ Marcucci currently in conversations to remain at the club. Marcucci is recovering from an injury, so I understand the roster gymnastics where AJ Marcucci was concerned. Carlos Cornell, remember, not a part of the future plans for Red Bulls. Julian de Guzman had his couple of sentences. Red Bulls two keeper Tobias Šušek is going to occupy a homegrown roster spot as of January 26. So not a whole lot of surprises out of Red Bulls, probably just the big name surprise that DC United put on the table that Benteke, they're not renewing the option, but they want to bring him back to the table.
That's a difficult decision. I mean, he is on about $5 million with compensation when it comes to his salary. That's a lot of money for a player of his age. Look, he's been great. He is a dominant aerial threat. Every single time you can count him in for goals, without a doubt. He is a cerebral player as well. I don't think he gets a lot of credit for how well he reads and crashes the box and the other things that he provides aside from goal scoring. But look, DC United gave up 66 goals this season. They were the worst team in the Eastern Conference. The problems are a lot bigger than whether you want to keep Benteke or not. There is an identity crisis. There's a lack of midfield. So
there's just a lack, period, at DC.
Exactly. And I guess, you know, we could put that on repeat because that's what we've seen from DC for so many years. But I really do think moving on from Benteke is in the benefit of just trying to fill up the rest of the holes of this team. When it comes to certain clubs, especially in a salary cap based league, at times you just need to allocate that money elsewhere. And I feel like DC needs to move on. Now, who picks that up? That could be interesting, right? There are only a few teams that I think could provide that solo salary in terms of money. But he is a guy that if you put him in a win now type of situation, win now type of team, I don't know. Let's call it, I don't know, Charlotte, call it, not Nashville, but you know, there's some clubs that be able to pay him. How about Columbus?
Well, I mean, you're looking for a team that needs a power forward. Basically you're saying, you're looking for that power, that post up power forward. And he made, to your point, he made just under full compensation was like $4,937,500, something like that last year. So he's going to want something in that ballpark, and you and your philosophy, you need that post up power forward that can distribute to the wings because of the positional gravity that he is going to attract. It's that second touch that it's always key to DC. As soon as Benteke chests it down, he's got possession of it. Where does he go? That's the key. So whatever offense can handle the GAM, handle the salary, handle the and handle the DP spot that they're going to have to surrender for somebody like Benteke, unless he goes, hi, Tam, maybe shoot. Power, you need a power forward, basically, first and foremost.
Yeah, I don't think he fits necessarily, and I do feel like these guys are going to go get more of their own style of striker. But if there's a team that has room and a spot, it could be Miami. I mean, Miami.
I wasn't going to say it.
I know. Staring at me in the face.
I thought it. And you've got the pink going on behind you.
That's what it was. That's what reminded me right there.
And I was like, he's got the pink going on the screensaver. It entered my head to be Messi and friends if you need a post-up power forward, but that kind of goes against what Mascherano has been doing with the speed and creating opportunities. It would be like replacing Suarez with Benteke, if that makes any sense.
Exactly. And that's the only reason why I brought it up, because that, you know, that could be it. That could be a possibility. Again, Columbus is another team that, you know, does need that firepower guy. Again, doesn't quite fit, but with Wilfred Nancy potentially leaving, what do we know about what's the fit? We don't know what that's going to look like next year. There's clearly a talented roster that needs that final gunpowder at the end of that attacking system. And, you know, he could be it, but there's going to be plenty of suitors for a guy like Benteke.
All right. So what is going on at Sounder at Heart and Pulso Sports? What are you doing for the holiday? What's the meal? What are you taking that no one else is allowed to eat? What's the wild card? Hit me.
Please go ahead and check out our end of season and the very last, what we learned this season, what we learned this week with Jeremiah Shand of the 2025 season. We really broke down everything that we heard from Brian Smetzer and Craig Weibel in this episode. We give you a real look on what to expect next season with the Sounders. I've heard a lot of, hyperbolic takes, and you know, there's MLS influences out there that they don't really have the insight. They kind of go more off of vibes, and you know, they were talking about how pivotal the next season for the Sounders is, and the reality is that there's no indicators that next season is going to be pivotal at all for the Sounders. You could even say that maybe it might be difficult to get the Sounders motivated the way you did this year, because you had Club World Cup, you had, all of these achievements, right? CCC, you know, all these things that you're playing for. Next season, you don't have a lot of that. A lot of the excitement is going to be just on the World Cup, and that has nothing to do with Sounders necessarily. So next season is going to be very low on news, very low on moves. You're going to take it on. The pivotal season will come 2027, which I asked about, but nobody wanted to talk about it. Craig Weibel was like, that's a year from now. We don't want to talk about that. But the calendar changed, potentially new ownership within the Sounders, a new way of doing business perhaps for this team. 2027 will be the pivotal season. So check that out. It's a really good episode. Really recommend it. On Monday, we'll come in back with Ari Lillenwall in kickoff. So those are the things that we have going on. Pulso Sports, of course, you'll find a press conference. You'll find a couple of other things that we're going to be doing for the end of season shows. And when it comes to Thanksgiving, have the whole family coming over. We got two different turkeys. My sister-in-law is making a turkey and salsa, which is a new recipe that she is putting together. My dad always does it very traditional style turkey. So we got a lot going on. I'm making a holiday Moscow Mule for the drink of choice. So yeah, man, it's going to be a good time here at the Moreno family household.
That turkey and salsa, that sounds, the boss would be all over that. She's into the spicier stuff.
Yes.
And yeah, so yeah, the boss would absolutely be all over that. So if that recipe is available, go ahead and email it to me, because I'm going to give it to her, and then she'll sit there and go, ooh, you know, she'll go and get it, you know.
Whatever. Oh yeah, I gotcha.
All right. I love you very much, my friend. Be safe. Have a great holiday. We'll catch up with you again next week, back to normal times, and we will know who's going to be in the last games of the year. So we'll figure it out. Oh, actually, can I have you next Wednesday again at 10:30? Week from today.
Yes, next Wednesday. Perfect. I'll make sure to put it on my phone, because if not, I'll absolutely forget.
Right.
So yes, absolutely. I'm in on Wednesday for sure.
Good deal, because Thursday next week, we're looking to try and get as many of our friends from Apple TV Plus to come in and crash and just look into the MLS High Senior Yearbook and give you know, most likely to succeed, all the awards and what they think for the season in MLS Cup. So that's going to be next Thursday.
Nice.
In a perfect world. And so I want you to anchor and be back here a week from today at 10:30. And then you'll be back in 2 weeks on your normal slot, and you'll see how tired I am after the high school football championship. So that's it for the next couple of weeks. Love you, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
Holiday doorbuster deals are on at Lowe's. Today only, get select one-quart poinsettias and select translucent plant saucers for $1 each. That means for a limited time, you can decorate to get in the Christmas spirit for less. Shop in-store to make sure you don't miss out on big savings all day. But hurry, these offers won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid 11/28, in-store only, limit 16 per person. Selection varies by location, while supplies last.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
As always, great to catch up with our friend Nico Moreno, and you can catch him traditionally if there aren't a whole lot of breaking news elements going on and world events shaping our weekly schedule. You can catch up with Nico 10:30 a.m. Eastern time, Monday through. You can catch up with him on Thursdays at 10:30, 10:35, usually the last half hour of the show. We catch up with him, find out what's on his mind. We get Major League Soccer from the Pacific perspective, our friend Nico Moreno from Pulso Sports. And Sounder at Heart. This is the Best of SDH AM, brought to you by the SDH Network and a Soccer Down Here, soccerdownhere.net, and also a Soccer Down Here on all social media platforms that you can like, follow, and be a part of our conversation with on a daily basis as we tour the planet and keep you as up to date as possible when it comes to everything going on in the world of soccer. In the NAIA, they are traveling, the teams that have made it to Nationals for the round of 16, they are traveling to Pensacola, and they are traveling to Orange Beach to try and determine who's going to be the winners this time around in the NAIA soccer tournament. And in this particular instance, we caught up with three of the surviving coaches that happened to be working in the SDH footprint. It was a trip to Truett McConnell University to catch up with their head coach, and it's also an opportunity to catch up with the coaches for the men's and women's soccer programs in Life University for the Running Eagles as they're chasing after titles as well. So it's conversations with Alex Palma, the men's head coach at Life University, Meg McGonigal, the women's head coach at Life University, and David McDowell, the longtime head coach on the women's side at Truett McConnell. We find out what's going on in all of their minds. First up, Alex Palma, as he gets ready on the men's side as a number five team in the country chasing after a national title. It's 10 o'clock, and being incredibly punctual, as he always is, he's right there. He's right there. He's on time, right there at 10 o'clock. He's ready to go. Practice is over, and he's ready to talk Life University soccer. We bring in their head coach, Alex Palma. Coach, thanks for the return visit. Thanks for dropping by. How was practice?
Practice very good this morning. Thank you. You're spot on.
It was, you know, I know that this time of year, it might be a bit of a challenge in a holiday week to try to make sure that everyone is, A, practicing, B, on the same page, not getting bogged down with L-tryptophan and everything else that's attached to turkey. How do you, in a postseason, juggle holiday and make sure that you're still getting the messaging, still getting everything that you want with the match on the other side of the holiday? How difficult is it practicing during a holiday week?
It's a little challenging, but you know, we knew this was coming and it falls right into it, so you kind of adjust a little bit. But the guys, by NIA rules, are entitled to one day off anyway, so it falls right into that category. And then we gave them an extra day off on Friday to kind of heal their bodies. At this point of the season, it's all about healing. It's all about, you know, maintaining a little bit of rhythm. But we're training Saturday and Sunday instead. Normally, we don't train Saturday, Sunday, and now we're training because we're playing the round of 16 match on Monday.
When you're navigating all these different things and that round of 16 matches 5 days from now, obviously, being as consistent as possible in your practice schedule is key, but with it being so far down the road, this time of year, that's a good thing. Instead of being in a rhythm, it's like, okay, we're playing, and then we got a day off, and then we're playing. You want that extra 5 days to heal up and get ready?
Yeah, I think so. I think at this time, most of the teams are all very good, but they're also a little bit beat up. Obviously, playing this many games in a short period of time, it's preferable, at least for us, to have a couple of days extra off so that they can heal their bodies, get more rest, do all of that. And at the same time, it is a little bit challenging not to get into a game rhythm, but you're trying to compensate with that in training, playing maybe a little bit more 11v11s, you know, mimicking game situations a little bit more to keep some of that rhythm still there. But I think we all prefer here at Life that we have a couple of days off, rest, heal our bodies, re-energize, and then go again hard on Monday. And then we're lucky that we play on Monday because that means that our next game will not be till Thursday. So we have that extra day of rest as well instead of playing the quarterfinal match on Tuesday where you only have one day of rest. So, but without luck, you know, you can't win championships. So we'll take it.
I was trying to do some quick math. Is it 14 different countries that are represented on the roster?
Yeah, you're about right. I think we're usually around between 20, 21 different nationalities we have on the roster. I don't know if we have 14 now because we have a lot of Italians, a lot of Spanish guys on the team. So that might have made it reduce the variety of nationalities, but it's a lot. And it brings all the different cultures into the team and all the different playing styles. And you got to put it into your playing style. So it's not always easy. It's challenging, but we've managed to do it so far.
So when you have the Eastern European influence, African influence, South America, and you know, CONMEBOL, CONCACAF influence as well, and you're merging all of these different ideas of how these folks were raised and wanting to come into your system, how much reining in and redirecting and rewiring of the brain does it take to make sure that they understand what you're hunting for and that they go in that direction in addition to what they know from back home?
Yeah, it's difficult, but it's my staff and I mean, we are international ourselves. So and it's all about communication. It's all about, you know, communicating with the guys what we want early on. Even in the recruiting process, so that you recruit the right type of player as well, because not every player can play in the American college system. You've got the challenge sometimes with guys who come from a very high professional academy overseas in Europe, and they come into the American college system and they think it's going to be easier or it's a step down. But in fact, they realize it's a totally different ballgame, and in some cases a step up from what they're used to. So, and as long as you communicate with the guys, we show video. We use a lot of video early on in the season. We talk to them, not just as a group, but we also talk to them individually. We talk to them in the lines so that everybody understands their role fairly quickly. And because you don't have a lot of time. And I sometimes joke, one of my good friends is the national team coach of Suriname. He's in the World Cup qualifying right now. And we joke about that my job might be a little bit more difficult than his job, because we have to not only gel him in a short period of time and fit him into the system, but we also have to win.
So what are those conversations like when you have a friend of yours who's chasing after a World Cup berth and moments of history for a country, especially in this cycle as chaotic as it's been, because the last CONCACAF match day was off the rails? What are those conversations like? Does he come to you for sanity breaks? Is that how that works?
Yeah, I mean, we've been friends from our days in the pro world in Europe, and obviously it's good to bounce ideas, because sometimes as a head coach you're a little bit lonely. Who are you going to talk to? If somebody can relate to your situation, it's easier to have a conversation with that person, and sometimes bounce ideas or just relieve some of the stress. It's better to vent to a good friend than to do it, in front of other people. So, but like I said, we joke about, because he's obviously curious about what the college system is like. And I always often say to him, my job is 10 times more difficult than your job. But of course, this cycle in the World Cup qualifier, I mean, he's got to play Bolivia next. So that's not an easy feature and an easy game to play. So, I wish him well, and I'm happy for little Curaçao that made it. I've been there quite a bit, and I help teams on Bonaire, their sister island. So very excited for this World Cup coming up and the countries that finally have a chance to qualify, because the powerhouses already are in CONCACAF. So exciting.
Then we find out what it's like on the other side of the aisle with Meg McGonigal. Meg McGonigal is getting ready for activity in the women's side of the tournament as Life University is chasing after a title. Here's part of our conversation with Coach McGonigal as she gets ready for her trip to Florida. 18-2-1 heading down to the Nationals, and you're averaging about 5 goals a match. And the thing that was staggering to me is that it's 25 and a half shots per match, just under 5 goals per match, and you've only given up 16 goals this season so far in your first 21 matches. Time to brag on the team a little bit. What's it like? Let me start with defense. Defense has only given up those 16 goals. What's it like to have a defense that has been as locked down as your defense has been this year?
Yeah, we've got a great group of girls there that are committed to blocking shots, heading balls, staying organized and compact, not giving much away. And we have a really good goalkeeper behind them. I always tell them, like, I do not want my goalkeeper to be the star of the show, because that means we're giving up too much. But she's been superb throughout the whole season. And she has been a star. So we have her, which helps for sure. But we've got 3 to 5 girls that we've got in that defensive rotation, in that back line right now, who have just been solid and committed. But we run our defense from our front line. Like, we're putting pressure on the ball high. We're making those forwards work and work and work. And without that work, the back line doesn't get to do what they do. So I think it is a whole group of 11 players that are defending for us. And I think sometimes we talk about people coming in and these forwards coming in looking at me like I'm crazy that they're going to have to do so much defensive work. But I think if you can keep the ball out of the net, then you're in any soccer game you want. And that's what they've done really, really well. So we're always looking every time we give up a goal at what went wrong there. But yeah, we haven't given up many. And I think that's really allowed us to stay in every single soccer game we've been in.
3 players double digits in scoring, and one of them is a senior from Middlesbrough. You've got 2 Georgians that are your other 2 double-digit goal scorers, but your leading scorer this year is Sasha Millward, 26 goals on the season. And the thing is, she's only started 9 games of the 21 that you've played so far, and she's got 26 goals on the board.
Yeah, she's a starter. So we have a rotation of players, and she's in that rotation. So she is. I'm fighting for her for all conference and awards within our conference. It's a tactical decision to do that. I just told you we work so hard with that front line defensively. If we can kind of weather the game for 15, 20 minutes there, tire the other team out, and then put Sasha in, she's just had so much success at scoring goals in those moments. And she works defensively as well. But if we think about her being our most clinical finisher right now, if we can take away the first 15 minutes, the speed that gets put on your legs there, and it's a little bit more frantic and it's a little bit of a boxing match, if we can take that off her workload, she plays starting minutes each game. Every big game we're in, whether she starts or not, she's 60, 70 plus minutes. She just doesn't get that start. So it's a really tactical decision, which Sasha understands and has bought into. We've had her in our starting group for the last couple of matches, just because I also know that we get a chance in that first 15 minutes, and who do I want it to fall to right now? And it would be Sasha. So I think we're still, again, developing and growing and playing around with things there. And I think each game we're looking at what we think is best tactically. But that's been that decision there to not start. So she's had starting minutes, but she's just come from off the bench.
Yep. Meg McGonigal, women's head coach at LifeU, hanging out with us here to kick off Freestyle Friday as she gets ready for a roadie to go down to Nationals in Pensacola in the NAIA starting next week. And I think, 22 different goal scorers this year to put? I mean, that's a lot of different numbers and names that you've got to keep up with stats within that G category.
Yeah, we've been lucky that our first rotation of players have done the job. And just with how college rules and soccer is, we can rotate through as many players as we want through that game through the regular season. So it's given us the opportunity to see more players and get them in the game. And I think that speaks to them buying into what we do, understanding our process, understanding that their time will come, and then taking those minutes when they come. So we've had a really good group. We've got a good freshman class this year who are learning and experiencing and growing and have gone through this whole process with us. So I think by next year, they're going to be really eager, ready and hungry. But a lot of them have stepped up in those moments and found goals and found stats. And it's been fantastic to see.
So for someone who hasn't had the chance to catch you either on video or in person this year, how would you describe what you want to do when things are going your way? Say whistle blows, everything's rolling, and you're getting done what you want to get done. How would you describe what you want to do philosophically for someone who's never seen you this year?
Yeah, I think we're really defensively organized. So I think that's kind of one of our core principles, that we will work hard defensively. We're transition back. We're going to get numbers behind the ball. And part of that defense is going out and being the aggressor when we haven't got it. So we go chase down a lot of balls that people might leave. We'll step up as high as we can. We have an emergency almost exit plan to get organized and get back if we need to. When we've got the ball, we like to possess, but I think it has to have a purpose. We don't need to connect 400 passes within a game if it's not getting us anywhere. And I think that speaks to how many shots we're getting off a game. Like, we have a purpose with our possession. We've tried to be a little bit more concentrated on our set pieces, where I think that was something we missed last fall, with just having success in being dominant there. And we've got a few girls right now who are serving good balls and putting them into good areas, and then girls that will go chasing down. So I think, yeah, defensively organized, hardworking, possession with a purpose, like to go to the goal, like to make it exciting to watch. No one wants to watch us pass the ball around the back for 20 minutes. So if we can go forward, we will. But it's not kick and run soccer. I think we've got a plan. And if we need to be direct, we can be. If we can play through the lines, we'd rather be that team. But we'll play whatever the opponent gives us. And we talk about that a lot. And that's kind of a problem-solving piece that we put on ourselves as a coaching staff and put on the team. Like, how do we solve this problem right now to get to the goal? And we've got a number of ways that we can do it.
Two coaches down, one to go. Time to catch up with David McDowell, the longtime head coach at Truett McConnell University, ranked in and around number 10 in the country. And they are, if I'm not mistaken, number 12 in the tournament, as they are prepping for their time and chasing after a championship in the NAIA. And they're heading down to the Nationals tournament down along the Gulf of Mexico coming up in the upcoming week. So here's our conversation with women's soccer head coach of Troup McConnell University, David McDowell, about their season and what he sees about his opponents ahead. David McDowell, head coach of the women's side at Troup McConnell, hanging out with us here as they are getting ready for the second round of the NAIA tournament. And I mean, look, I, as someone who has been on that campus, I know that lactic acidosis is not my best friend, because if all those hills that are there on that campus, if you're not properly hydrated and everything, you've got to be ready for that campus, man, and going into downtown Cleveland. I know all about it. But at the same time, you're looking for a specific kind of individual to be there at Truett McConnell. It's not just the on the field stuff that you're looking at. You're looking at the whole person, right? Because of the devotion that you have to giving back to the community. And I thought that the numbers, the number of man hours, the number of player hours that you guys give back to the community, I thought that was another cool aspect. And I know that when you're looking for those student athletes, that's got to be another part of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The one of our core values, the girls hear from me a lot, is servant leadership. And then the other one is excellence. And I'm a big believer that, you know, it's not just about what you're doing on the field. You want to pursue excellence in every area. And, you know, for me personally, you know, I've been given a lot, and I think it's important for these girls, especially in today's culture, to understand the importance of giving back. And so with the team, you know, we emphasize putting others before yourself, giving back to the community, and trying to help them understand certain habits now that are going to be better realized in life later on. And I think, as you and I can testify to, it gets tough in the real world. And for me, ultimately, the most important thing is preparing these girls for what happens after their time at Truett, and that real world scenario. And that's what I love about college athletics is, you know, we get to form these relationships and hopefully have an impact in their lives that makes them better people in their walk. So, yeah.
When you look at the bracket, it was a second round matchup, because you bypassed it as the number 12 national ranked team, the number 10 seed in the overall tournament. You guys were waiting. You're in the second round. You're waiting to look at everybody else on the 20th. You had a matchup against Cumberland, Tennessee up there in round number one. Did you anticipate that it would be as hairy as it got in the second half when they drew close to you there? Because we were looking at the highlights and saw that there was a little bit of distance, and then Cumberland comes back, and then you get the one late. Did you anticipate it being that hairy?
100%. I mean, this Cumberland's a quality team. I mean, we've never beaten them before this year. In fact, last year they beat a 7-1 early on the season. So we knew it was going to be a tough game. Their coach is very good. And our first half was tremendous. It's probably one of the best halves of soccer we've had in a long time. Scored 3 goals early. And it almost caused us to kind of fall into a little bit of a lull. But as you know, we told the girls at this level, every team we're playing now is good. And every team's going to have that sense of desperation to say, in 45 minutes, we may be done with our season, so we're going to give everything that we have. And so once the first goal went in, you know that leads to a little bit more momentum. And then the second goal happened, and you know, you start to sweat a little bit. But I will say what I was most pleased about from the girls was their response to the second goal. And they kind of just stuck together and didn't allow any more clear-cut chances after that. And then, of course, the fourth goal was what we were needing. It just settled everybody's nerves late on, and allowed us to kind of see the game out. But yeah, at 3-2, it you know, it gets a little bit nervous, but the girls' response to the second goal was huge.
And now you have a week that includes holiday activity before you head down and take care of the matchup in the round of 16 against Grace of Indiana. So it's a 7-10, it's chalk in your section of the bracket. Yeah. How do you navigate a holiday week? Obviously, you're sitting there going, first and foremost, yeah, man, we're still practicing and we're still playing. How do you navigate a holiday week plus travel to get ready for a round of 16 matchup against the national 7 seed?
Yeah. I mean, we made the decision early on, if we made it to the final site in Florida, we were going to give the girls this week off. So after the game Saturday, we allowed them to go home, and we said the only thing is we'll bring you back Thursday night. So have time with your family, have your Thanksgiving meal, and then we'll come back Thursday, train that night, train twice on Friday, and then we'll head out in Florida Saturday morning. So I at this point in the season, I think what matters most is having more of a mental rest. Mm-hmm. It's such a long season. And, you know, at this point, as we tell the girls all the time, we're not really going to teach you anything new. It's mostly about maintaining the sharpness. But I think the mental aspect of just renewing themselves, being around family and friends, I think that's probably the best recipe to have them come back as sharp as possible.
So when it comes to Thursday mm-hmm. and the players that are, you know, from Europe, mm-hmm. how are they spending Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. Are they going home mm-hmm. with Georgia players and sharing the Thanksgiving experience? Mm-hmm. How are they celebrating Thanksgiving so far mm-hmm. from
home? Yeah, so some of them did go home with some of our Georgia-based girls. There's a few that stayed on campus. And, you know, for them, Thanksgiving is just really more of another turkey meal. So they're focusing more on getting ahead in their homework, maybe just enjoying having the campus to themselves. But there are some there that they wanted more of the American experience, and so they went home with some of the Georgia girls.
Okay, how are the European players integrating to life in the Southeast? Huh?
Yeah, it's unique. You know, I mean, a lot of our European girls are from, you know, larger cities within Europe. And whenever you come to Cleveland, Georgia, where there's maybe four traffic lights and, you know, sometimes you get caught behind a tractor, it can be different. But I think they enjoy just what the atmosphere of Truett is, and the team is for them the most important part. And that's why, you know, for us, it's about creating that family atmosphere for sure.
No doubt about it. It's great to catch up with you, Coach. Yeah. Glad you made it out of round number two mm-hmm. and have a fantastic Thanksgiving week.
Thank you.
And enjoy it everywhere and just get down there safe and then have a great time in the national mm-hmm. bubble that's going to be down there next week. Week from today, yeah. 10 o'clock start. How are you going to navigate a 10 o'clock start on a Tuesday morning? I mean, literally, is it getting up at the crack of before? Like, are you getting up at like 4 a.m. or something? How does that push your game and all that?
Yeah, I didn't know what to think about that 10 o'clock start. And we're just going to have to embrace it. I mean, the day before that Monday, we have a 8 o'clock practice. So I'm trying to create an environment where they're getting up, you know, Sunday and Monday at the same time that they want to get up for Tuesday. And just kind of recreate what Tuesday may look like. But it'll be an early start, and hopefully most of the team are early risers. I mean, they've been having to get up for 6 a.m. workouts throughout the season. So hopefully, you know, that kind of helps them get ready for a 10 o'clock kickoff.
All right. And we'll be keeping an eye on things, NAIA website, Urban Edge Network, down at the final site and the bubble that is everybody chasing after a championship. Do not be a stranger. Have a fantastic holiday. And we'll be keeping an eye on you. Thanks for dropping by the morning show and letting us know about what's going on there at Truett with the Bears as you guys chase after an NAIA title on the women's side. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
David McDowell, the head coach for Truett McConnell, as they chase after a championship in the NAIA. He's got some time off. So from his office, he came and visited this week.
Holiday doorbuster deals are on at Lowe's. Today only, get select one-quart poinsettias and select translucent plant saucers for $1 each. That means for a limited time, you can decorate to get in the Christmas spirit for less. Shop in-store to make sure you don't miss out on big savings all day. But hurry, these offers won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid 11/28, in-store only. Limit 16 per person. Selection varies by location. While supplies last.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Thanks to Life University, and thanks to all three coaches as they prepped us as best they could with the NAIA tournaments coming up on the men's and the women's side just around the corner in Orange Beach and Pensacola as they're chasing after championships in the NAIA here in 2025. Last up here on the Best of SDHAM is part of a project that we have undertaken here at the Soccer Down Here Network, looking at the World Cup in 2026, but not necessarily from an on-the-field X's and O's perspective. What we've decided to do and what we're going to be doing between now and through the World Cup, frankly, and then doing questions and answers after the World Cup is over and the cities that are the host cities kind of calm back down and get back to the pre-World Cup 2026 normal, is catch up with as many of the host cities as possible, find out the challenges that they are undergoing, how they're undertaking them, how they're succeeding in them, how they're conquering them, and what issues and obstacles they feel are going to be the ones that are staring them right in the face, and they're going to be a part of the navigation of the entire process. And so we're catching up with each of the host cities, finding out what they're up to when it comes to construction and infrastructure and transportation and getting from point A to point B and making sure that they're all as ready as they can be when the world comes to visit in the summer. Our first visit goes to Toronto, Ontario, and how they are piecing things together in getting ready for the world to come by Toronto in 2026. We caught up with the executive director of the Toronto Host Committee, Sharon Bollenbach, and it was a chance for us to ask Sharon some questions about where she feels the city is, the organization is, how many different agencies they have to where they have to be on the same page. And it was a learning experience for us, and we're hoping it's a learning experience for you that you can compare and contrast everything going on when it comes to each of the host cities as you may go visit them or if you just want to watch from afar and see how they're all handling the World Cup here in a handful of months, really, about 7 months' time when the world comes to each and every market. So here's our first visit as we tour the host cities when it comes to the World Cup with Executive Director in Toronto, Sharon Bollenbach. So, Sharon, let me get this straight. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you probably have the front and the back of the business card all covered up with the title and all of the responsibilities. So I looked this up, and tell me if I'm wrong. Executive Director, FIFA World Cup 2026, Toronto Secretariat, City of Toronto. Is all four columns, is that square?
That is correct. Yes.
So with the history that you have with big ticket items and large events there in the GTA, I mean, we're talking FIFA U20, we're talking Special Olympics, COC, Skate Canada. What attracted you to this particular job at this particular point of your career?
Yeah, you've done your homework. Well, I've come into this role from Special Olympics, as you mentioned, where I had been for 16 years, the last 10 as the CEO of Special Olympics Canada, and loved my work there, loved the organization. I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Special Olympics, but I was ready for a change. I was ready for a new challenge. Felt like I maybe had another leap in me. and the opportunity. I had worked on the U20s that were in Canada in 2007. I was the general manager for the Toronto site. And I thought, you know what? We've got a World Cup coming. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to be part of this event, to be part of bringing this amazing global event to our city, and decided to throw my hat in the ring. And here we are.
18 years later, how different is it planning for a World Cup as it was planning for the U20s for FIFA back in 07?
Well, interestingly enough, our first site visits at the stadium back in 2007, we were wearing hard hats and boots because it was under construction. And so here we are doing a capital project to prepare for the World Cup all these years later. But, you know, a World Cup, there's no question. I mean, a World Cup is on a completely different level. The U20s were an amazing event. We had all kinds of records in that event from, you know, sales and those types of things across Canada. It was amazing to be part of that, which is what sort of drew me to be part of the World Cup. But, you know, there's no question it's on a completely different scale.
How many different, I guess, venues are in play here, whether we're talking BMO for the actual soccer, the practice facilities, housing athletes, housing all the support personnel, all of the ancillary things that you're talking about, the game day events? How many different venues are you and the staff there having to coordinate to make sure that everything is going on a daily basis the way that it should during this month that is going to bring the world to Toronto?
Yeah, some of the things you've mentioned there in terms of locations are actually responsibility of FIFA. So host city, you know, aren't sort of linked to them directly. So as a host city, we are, of course, responsible for getting the stadium ready. And in this case, you know, probably mid-May, we will literally sort of hand the keys of the stadium over to FIFA, who will then take over the operations. We have, as you mentioned, we have a training site, which in the case of Toronto, we needed to build one new pitch and the field house and amenities that go with that pitch. And we chose to have our training site at a large urban park in Toronto that we're very proud of, because that training site will be one of our legacy items post-tournament and is part of a 10-year master plan of redevelopment. So we're excited that we could tie that into a priority of the city that already existed, and we'll support that. And then we'll be hosting our FIFA Fan Festival in a location. It's called Fort York and the Bentway, in sort of the downtown core of Toronto, a short walk from the stadium, actually. So those are the main ones we're managing as a host city. And then things like team hotels and lot, you know, and FIFA guests and others coming from FIFA are managed by FIFA themselves.
All right. So I know that you probably have somewhere in your office, you've got the 4 foot by 6 foot, probably wrapped around two walls, the dry erase board that's got all of the different things and the arrows and all the different colored markers and all this kind of stuff when it comes to to-do lists. Might be on a Google Doc, might be on, you know, might be on LegalPad, kind of like what I still do these days. Where is that to-do list, and how are you in the process? You mentioned a couple of dates with BMO and such, but where are you on the road of crossing off everything on this list, getting ready for something that is only 7-8 months away?
Yeah, that countdown clock is ticking away. There's no question about it. And you know, myself and the team and those partners and stakeholders working with us are certainly feeling that. You know, lots to do, not going to lie. We've got, as with any big event, there's always, you know, the stuff that comes at the end. But we've also accomplished a lot. I'm really proud of some of the promotional things we've done. We had an excellent 1 year to go celebration here in Toronto, a public event that was very well attended, people showing up with their favorite jerseys on, celebrating all things football, which really kind of, you know, was heartening for us to know the type of support we're going to see in Toronto and the energy and excitement around having this event in our city. In terms of like big items, I think that the two kind of key well, there's probably more than two, but a couple of the key ones that come to mind for sure is we are doing a capital project at the stadium. To meet FIFA requirements, we actually have to increase the capacity, the seating capacity. The stadium currently holds about 28,000, and we need to be at a minimum of 45,000 as a host city for a World Cup. So we are adding temporary seating to our stadium to get us up to that capacity. And we're doing a host of other upgrades and things at the stadium that, again, will be legacy items that will improve fan experience post-tournament. So we are complete with phase one of that capital project and just launching phase two, which is really steel starting to rise for the structures for the temporary seating. So that's been a massive project that really is one of the things that kind of had to start day one because we needed the runway to finish that project off. The second big item for us here in Toronto, and you may have heard about it on the news, is our traffic. We have, you know, crazy traffic and transportation congestion here in Toronto. And so early on, we brought on a transportation consultant to support us. And we have a very strong table of transportation experts, including here at the city, the consultant that I spoke of, some provincial transportation providers, et cetera, so that all the players are around the table. And so our transportation and mobility strategy is something that's been in the works for a long, long time too. One of the first things we started. And then big elements coming up are fan festival. You know, we really want to have an amazing fan festival for residents here in Toronto, but also people visiting from outside. Really want it to be a central place of celebration and fun and safe and secure and all those good things that an event should be. And so there's a lot of work to still be done on that element as well.
Okay, so you mentioned transportation. That's something mm-hmm. that here in our base in Atlanta is something that has to be tackled as well. But the infrastructure, the transportation infrastructure, at least in public transportation, is in place where you can hop on the elevated trains, the MARTA train, as it's called here, the rapid transit. And you can go from northern suburbs. You can come from the airport, go straight into downtown. You can go from east to west and come into downtown where it's hubbed right there in the middle. For those that don't know what TTC can do and where it is when it comes to the integration, I'll get to the QEW and the traffic there in a second. But when it comes to TTC itself, where does it fall in the plan to make sure that everyone can get from point A to point B and get to fan fests, get to the fort, get to BMO? Where does TTC work in all of this?
Yeah, so the TTC in Toronto, and it's Toronto Transit Commission, is where TTC comes from. So that, you know, their fleet of vehicles include underground subway, includes above ground buses, as well as streetcars. So there's a whole circuit and a number of different routes that come from various points and directions across the city, north, south, east, west. And so we are working very closely with the TTC to both manage volume capacity. We're changing a couple of platforms near the stadium so that we can increase sort of access to the streetcar in one area that's kind of a critical point. We want to be able to not just have a stop point that, you know, can accommodate maybe a couple of streetcars, but one that can accommodate four or five. So we're revising one of the platforms for the streetcar. And then similar to how you've described, John, we have a commuter train coming from suburbs, both east and west of Toronto, called the GO train, that really is our commuter train coming into the city. And so Metrolinx, which is the provincial transportation organization, manages the GO. So they're at this table as well. In terms of planning and execution. And then we also have a train service called the UP, above rail or above ground rail, that comes from the airport, to and from the airport, right into downtown. So there's a number of players, as I mentioned, at this planning table that all are managing capacity. And one of the interesting things that we're, you know, the, I guess, sort of the next big kind of nugget of information we need to refine and continue to build our transportation plan are the match times. which of course we'll be getting coming out of the draw that happens on December 5th.
You mentioned Go, you mentioned Metro, you mentioned TTC, and I mean, this is something that is going to be an impact for the entire Golden Horseshoe. I mean, this is literally from everybody. The second you cross the Peace Bridge, you're at Niagara Falls, you're making that big sweep, you're coming through Hamilton, you're coming into the GTA. This is something that is going to be impacting this entire region. Has there been any numbers come out about how many folks you're anticipating during this month, whether they're there to watch matches or not, economic impact? Are any of those numbers come to the fore for projections yet?
Yeah, the expectation is around, and these are probably, you know, probably need to be sort of updated, and I'm sure will be after the draw is done and we know what countries are going to be competing in Toronto. But sort of older, I guess, or previous estimations have us seeing about 300,000 visitors coming into the city. And of course, that doesn't include residents who, as you've mentioned, would be coming in from, you know, various places in and around the Golden Horseshoe. So it's a, you know, significant increase to volume. We also know there's going to be other events happening. You know, Toronto's a big city. There's lots going on. There's other things happening during this time period. So we're working with a lot of other partners around the other events, concurrent events that will be taking place, how we manage those from, you know, do any times need to shift? If it's a smaller event or even a larger one, can we, you know, shift location a little bit to stay away from the key hubs that will be extremely busy for World Cup? So there's a lot of integrated planning going on with, you know, not just transportation, but with other, I guess, event providers in the city as well.
How many different, when you are at this table, this table with all the stakeholders, how rectangular is this table? How I mean, are you at the Coliseum? You know, it's like, you got to tell the Marlies, it's like, no, look, we need the space here. We need the space with all of these stakeholders to hang on to this meeting, push your match back a little bit. How many folks are we talking about at this long rectangular table where you're sitting there and having to coordinate all these different folks and agencies and shareholders and stakeholders? How many folks are we talking that you have to integrate here?
Yeah, good question, John. I actually don't know the exact number, but I can tell you it's very extensive and comprehensive and complicated, right? Like you've just hit it. This is a complicated, you know, one of a complicated structure and a model on a big event of this size and scope. And you know, one of the things that's a key part of my role is to make sure that we bring the right people to the table that we're all sort of aligned and going in the same direction. So we have a number of small sort of working groups, right? There's a working group focused on transportation, a group focused on marketing communications, a group focused on, you know, revenue generation, a group that's a team that's focused on the capital project at the stadium, a team that's focused on fan festival. So, and bringing all the right players to those individual smaller teams. And then we meet sort of as an overall operations with the key leads from those groups regularly to bring all the folks in so that there is this bigger picture lens that, you know, those smaller groups who have a very specific task and focus know that they're part of a bigger picture and whatever they're planning needs to tie with the next group and the next group. So it's sort of integrating all those sort of very focused plans into one larger plan that sees the event as a whole be a success.
How daunting a task is it with all of these subcommittees and subgroups and rectangular tables that go through the horizon and start at SkyDome and work their way to the Air Canada Center and the post office here? I mean, how many different subcommittees are we talking here?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, our organizational chart is extensive. And, you know, our model here in Toronto, which may be different, you know, your listeners might be hearing different models from different cities. You know, the secretariat group specifically, you know, is quite small that we have here at Toronto, but the model is very much one where we're tapping into the expertise of people either within the city or externally to the city. So, you know, the core secretariat team is part of facilitating, bringing in the experts from transportation, from waste management, from legal, from marketing and communications, and on and on. And so we're tapping into expertise that already exists here at the city. And this has really been identified as, you know, senior leaders at the city as obviously a priority. It's a big investment from a financial perspective. And so it's been, you know, it's Team Toronto. We might be a secretariat kind of leading the delivery, but or leading the charge on the planning. But the delivery model is one that is truly a Team Toronto approach.
How much capital investment are we talking here, whether it is the expansion of BMO by 50%, roads, infrastructure, the TTC that we were talking about? Any clue as to published figures as to how much capital investment has been made by the Ontario government, City of Toronto, all these different stakeholders to make sure that this is going the way that they want it to go?
Yeah, our investment at the stadium is about $125 million. And then we've got investment at Centennial Park, as I mentioned, for the training site as well, of about another $20-$25. So, you know, we're in the range of $150 to $160 on capital projects for stadium and training site. And then, you know, there's been some of that investment, as part of other city plans in some of these other areas. So if there was a plan to, you know, upgrade one of the streets and you know, TTC locations at one area, that has been built into some of the city planning as preparation. And again, that sort of Team Toronto approach for the tournament.
What has been the most pleasant surprise about this process to this point, where we're 8 months away from action actually happening at BMO? Has there been something that you sat there, it was almost like a eureka moment of like, oh, wow, that's really cool. What's been the most pleasant surprise of this process?
Yeah, you know, one that I'm really, thanks for asking that. It's good to talk about some of the great things happening and the things we're proud of. But one of the interesting things that's recently happened is, of course, we're going to be, you know, tapping into amazing volunteers as any major event does. And I'm sure all of the host cities, I think all of the host cities are, and we certainly are here in Toronto as well. And volunteer registration is online. You know, FIFA are very engaged in that. They've created a really interesting sort of brand for the volunteer program and have really, you know, been supportive in creating an on-site online training, all of those things. So I think registration opened at the end of August. And of course, we promoted that across all of our social channels and other places here in Toronto. And then I think it closed early October. And we had over 248,000 people register to volunteer. And yes, you heard right, almost 250,000 people. And that was pretty extraordinary. Like we, you know, when you're kind of thinking, oh, you know, we don't have, you know, we don't have a massive, massive marketing budget here in the city for this event. And you know, sometimes there's comments about, you know, are you guys really getting the word out? We don't see a lot of stuff and all these kinds of things. Well, 250,000 people took the time to register online and are willing to give of their time and talents. And they're excited enough to give up time and talents to be part of this event. So somewhere somebody's knowing something about it. So that was a real win for us. And I think we all sat back and went, wow, this is super cool. Like it's a, for me, having been involved in sport my entire career, you know, it was a real, I guess, moment where you sort of go, hey, that's part of our Canadian culture. It's part of our culture that we volunteer and we step up and we get engaged in community and we want to be part of these big events. And, you know, sport in Canada does not happen without volunteers. And we were the highest registration number of volunteers out of the 16 host cities. And interestingly enough, Vancouver was second. And so to me, that does really speak to a Canadian culture of volunteerism, of supporting sport, of wanting to get involved and be part of these big events in our communities. Yeah, so that's a really exciting one that we're really proud of. And I think is a bit of an indicator of some other things, that just the interest bottom line, the interest in this event.
And what I'd like to do is put a bookmark right there in our discussion, because we want to come back and visit one more time as we turn the calendar and get a lot closer to the games actually happening. We want to come back, do a bit of a check-in, see how you're doing, you know, see if you need any cold compresses or anything, or if you need to, you know, if anybody needs like the Theraguns or anything because of typing and being hunched over, things like that. We'd love to come back and touch base and find out how things are progressing as we get closer and closer to the World Cup on the 26th side of the calendar. I can't thank you enough for being this open and honest about the process. Look forward to asking more questions, finding out more things, and getting ready for a 26. Thanks for dropping by the morning show.
Happy to share, John. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, as always, for each of these bid cities and understanding what we were trying to accomplish with these interviews, each and across the way. We do have another handful in the queue. We will be catching up with Vancouver in the early part of December and finding out how they are handling it as well. And so we're going to be chasing after as many of the host cities as humanly possible when it comes to finding out how they're adjusting and how they are making sure that all of their plans can be implemented as best they can when the world comes to visit in 2026. Thanks for all of you guys for hanging out with us here for the Best of SDHAM. Once again, like, friend, be a part of the conversation on the SDH Network, on all of our social media platforms. You can also come and listen to us every week either at 92.9 The Game in the podcast section at Off the Woodwork, the Odyssey app, or wherever you find your favorite podcatchers and your favorite podcasts as well. So you can keep an eye on us every single week as we bring you the best of our morning show program, SDHAM, on the Soccer Down Here Network. For everybody at SDH, I'm just John. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. Play safe, everybody. Enjoy the games. Mucha plata, y'all. We'll catch up with you next week.
Holiday doorbuster deals are on at Lowe's. Today only, get select one-quart poinsettias and select translucent plant saucers for $1 each. That means for a limited time, you can decorate to get in the Christmas spirit for less. Shop in-store to make sure you don't miss out on big savings all day. But hurry, these offers won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid 11/28, in-store only, limit 16 per person. Selection varies by location, while supplies last.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.